Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good morning, everybody. Glenda Geek here from a very wet, soggy, rainy, miserable Lexington, Kentucky.
I'm Jamie Jennings from a very beautiful Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for January 11th, 2012, episode 312, sponsored by Audible.com. Good morning, Horse World.
Big Wednesday, the day you face your own biggest challenge, the day you risk it all, the day you either distinguish yourself or fade into the crowd.
Hang on, we're hitching a ride.
Daddy, I want another pony.
I put 40 hours in this weekend, man, it's only Wednesday. I've been cutting this damn heat all day long, there's got to be another way. So I pick up my guitar and
I love that. Daddy, I want another pony. I love that. So, you know, Jamie, I'm going to reword that phrase, and I'm going to say, Jamie, I want another game because I have to concede. I just resigned because you whooped my butt in Words with Friends.
Oh, my goodness. Hold on. Let's see. What was the final score, Glenn?
I have no idea because I resigned and the game went away. I don't know what happened.
Well, if you just give me just a second, I can find out what the score actually was. Why don't you go over? Oh, there you go. Glenn the Geek resigned. Ha ha. Rematch. I would like to know what were your final words? Your final words. It sounds like you like died or something. What were your final words?
My final words were we. W-E, because I had run out of letters. That was pretty much had only a few letters left. So we, meaning you and your horse, we, together, you know, we. Greed, which there's plenty of that to go around in the horse business. I think that's pretty self-explanatory. And I had a pretty good horse word, mule. Mule's a good one.
Because it's half horse. The final score, ladies and gentlemen, because I know people are just dying to know. Final score, Glenn the Geek, my boss, founder of the Horse Radio Network, where he uses English on a daily basis. His score was 231. Jamie Jennings coming in with a 302-point score. Dude, I kicked your butt.
Yeah, you know, it was pretty close there for the first half of the game, and then you whooped me.
Then I put much like, it's not a sprint, Glenn, it's a marathon, and I pulled out... I kept running the marathon where you might have just stopped kind of halfway in the middle of my scoring point. So, pretty much.
Do you know, though, the word that changed it all? Do you know the word that was the turn of the tide?
Yes, I do. It was chi, and that's my chi, baby. That's my chi. It was a cleansing energy life force that pulled ahead out of the whole thing. So, yeah, chi. My last words were land, because you have to have land to have a horse. Stow, because you can stow away in my awesome trailer. And maze, because I find a cross-country course much like a maze sometimes where you're trying not to jump the wrong fences and get lost. So, those are my final three words. We're going to rematch. I kind of am interested to see if, number one, should we keep doing horse words? I think so. And number two, should we bore the listeners with our words again?
No, I don't think so. I think we should bore with our words, but I will be reporting on the finish of the next game when I beat you.
Yeah, sure, because that's going to happen. All right, well, I guess if you don't want to do horse words, we'll do whatever words. So I kind of like the whole horse theme.
All right, we can stick to horse words, but I don't think we have to bore the listeners with it, and embarrass me every day, which is more important part of that.
I win.
No,
I am not winning.
I am not winning with anybody. I have like 10 games going, and I'm not beating anybody. Nobody.
Glenn, hold up for a second, because I would like to go ahead and do something. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much. As the victorious player of Words with Friends against Glenn the Geek, I would like to again thank you for that fantastic round of applause. You know you would be doing this to me if you won.
I would. I would be doing it much worse because I would have put together a whole entire sound file of cheering.
I don't have that capability on my phone, so I'm just going to continue to do this randomly throughout the show.
Now, you can feel very proud in knowing that you beat somebody that has never won a game.
I've only won a game against one listener, and they're listening now going, yes, I was the one. And so you are the second person. I cannot seem to beat anybody. My sister-in-law, Chris Stafford, is ridiculous. She is.
Yeah,
like,
I'm
going
to stop playing with Chris. It's just embarrassing.
Yeah, I know, and I keep trying to stop playing with her, and she keeps re-challenging me, and then we'll play some word like czar, you know? Like, I don't want to play you anymore. It's no fun. It hurts my feelings.
Right. We should call
like
her on the show. We should call her on the show one of these mornings and just tell her how we feel about
slaughtering us. We should. Let's call her up. Put that on the schedule for tomorrow, Jennifer. I think we need to come clean with Chris and just, I dread playing her. Like, I'm like, oh, she responded again. God. Yeah, we got to do that. Let's call her up.
She has a beat for sure. All right, well, I concede you win, but the next game is starting, so look out. Jennifer,
okay,
what's
one
coming
more
up
time
on-
for fun. Hold on.
On today's Audible.com Wednesday edition, we've got crappy lists from Glenn, clever training techniques for kids from Shauna Koresh, and coincidentally, a clever equine eyeball doctor on the Horse.com's weekly health report, so stay tuned.
And
well, my daily Winnie today is another birthday. Boy, there's a lot of birthdays in January. And I'm trying to play the birthday song. There. I got to make that a little longer. It hardly gets out. Happy birthday. Happy birthday to Glenn Forrester, part of the Man Nation here on Horses in the Morning. Happy contributor and regular listener to the show. So happy birthday to Glenn. I only have one. I only have that one short one there today, Jamie. So it's your turn.
Well, this Daily Winnie goes out to Rachel Rosenthal. And here's why. Rachel Rosenthal posted, oh my God, the cutest baby video of sloths getting baths. Baby sloths getting a bath is the cutest thing I've ever seen. So I went online. I cannot seem to upload this. I'm going to forward this to you, Jennifer, and see if you can get it to upload because I have found something to top the cutest baby sloth video ever, and it was sent to me by my mom. So second Daily Winnie, please.
Oh, sorry. I was sleeping.
Goes to my mom for sending me the cutest email ever, and we're going to try to get those up online here. I just sent them to Jennifer. For some reason, my Facebook is not wanting to upload them. So, cutest thing ever, Rachel Rosenthal. Glenn, did you watch the video?
I did, and, you know, it was kind of cute. You know, I'm not big on sloths, so they kind of look like just wet rats after they're done, but...
Oh, you watch them out. Did you actually watch it with the audio?
No, I did not watch it with the audio.
Oh, see, what you have to do is you have to watch it with the audio because there's like a baby sloth that's like 5 days old and they're giving it a bath and it's sitting there and it's soaking wet and it's so cute and it turns over and it turns its head upside down, looks at the camera and goes, sorry, I ovulate every time I see that. Ah! So cute.
All right. Today we have I think it's a pretty good list for you here in a few minutes. Plus, I have a couple of lottery stories. We haven't done lottery stories in a while, and I have a couple of interesting lottery stories happened since came out in the recent weeks, so I thought I'd share those with everybody. But first, it's time to review the listening options. I got an email from a very nice listener yesterday. He loves listening to the show. But she had some questions on listening, and I thought I'd clarify some things here for everybody. If you're listening live, you have a couple of options for listening live. You can listen on our website just by clicking the live listen button at the top of the page. It's real big. You can click on that. It opens up a window in your computer, and you can listen. So that's if you're listening live on your computer. You can do that very easily by just going to horsesinthemorning.com and clicking on the live listen button. If you're listening live on your phone, most people know now to go to Horses in the Morning. Open up your browser on your phone. Go to horsesinthemorning.mobi, M-O-B-I, and you'll see a little play live button there after the show has started. Now, you can also, this is what she is doing. She is also, she can't listen live, so later in the day, she's going to horsesinthemorning.mobi, and you can listen to the recorded shows from there. But if you get interrupted, if your phone rings, if you have to stop it, or if you turn it off for whatever reason, it starts over from the beginning. So it's not the most ideal way to listen to the recorded show later in the day. If you're listening to the podcast or the recorded version, the best ways to do that, a couple of them, is go to our website at horsesinthemorning.com, and you can listen to the recorded versions there. If you're listening on your phone, the best way to do it is to download it as a podcast, either through iTunes, or there are several applications for listening to podcasts on Android and iPhones. There are several different applications that you can use that you can listen to our shows recorded. And then what happens, it's very nice, if you get a phone call, it just pauses the podcast, and then when you hang up, it starts the podcast again. So those are better ways to do it than I do not recommend it going to horsesinthemorning.mobi to listen to the recorded version. It will frustrate you, and it was frustrating this listener. So either go to the website at horsesinthemorning.com or download it, subscribe through iTunes to the show, or download it, or get one of the applications that you can listen to podcasts on your phone. So those usually cost $1.99, $2.99 for the different applications that do that. And there's a bunch of them, and so they're usually pretty good. So there's one called Podcaster, P-O-D-C-A-S-T-E-R, that you can go to the App Store and find, and that one works pretty well and does the whole pause thing for you. So that's how you can listen to the show in different ways. Did I cover that pretty well, Jamie? Is there any questions? Do you have any questions?
Yeah, I quit listening about 5 minutes ago because I don't listen to our show ever.
Okay. All right, so if you do have any questions on that, post them on Facebook at Horses in the Morning or send me an email, and I'll try and get them answered for you. Now, Really Bad Ads is coming up on Friday, and the winner is going to get the brand-new Nalox Plus. It's going to get a quantity of that to try out on your horse or horses. So you're going to want to get your Really Bad Ads in for Friday and send them to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. The winner, as I said, gets Kentucky Performance Products Nalox Plus. And we'll be talking more about that on Friday because we will be out at Kentucky Performance. I will be out at Kentucky Performance Products doing the show live from their warehouse. And, Jamie, I'm happy to announce that we did confirm Frankie Lovato for Friday morning. So we are going to make our predictions and picks.
For what?
For
the Eclipse Award?
The Eclipse Award. That's correct. So we will be making our predictions for the Eclipse Awards. Coming up this weekend, I think.
Like, are we doing derby picks already? Woo, I better start reading up. Hey, speaking of making their picks, did you see who was rated in the 2011 World Thoroughbred Rankings? Who was ranked number one?
No.
The horse from England, Frankel, he's from Great Britain, Frankel, who was named after the old trainer that died, Bobby Frankel, came in at number one. Number two course of the entire year in the entire world came out to be Black Caviar.
Black Caviar,
who is, of course, still undefeated. So got some top horses up there. Now, of course, the United States, the first horse to pop up in the United States ended up being Drosselmeyer, who came in at number 14, the highest ranked United States horse. So, it was kind of confusing because I thought that some of these horses would be a little bit higher up in the rankings, but like Havre de Grace ended up being, I think, Goldakova ended up being number 14, tied with Drosselmeyer. And then I'm looking for Havre de Grace. Animal Kingdom came in at number 38. And, of course, Animal Kingdom won the Derby. Shackleford, number 38 as well, tied with Uncle Mo for number 38. So they do it on these speed rankings and how fast. And I think that they have some sort of, like, quantum physics calculations that they do with the running and the racing and all these different things that they put in with money and earned and all sorts of stuff. So the number one horse of the entire year was Frankel. So, you know, if you're going to pick a horse that's going to be the Eclipse Award, I'm going to take a look at this list. You can find it on the bloodhorse.com or the ifhaonline.org, the International Federation of Horse Racing Authorities. So I've got a leg up. I'm not going to lie. I might have a pick.
It's funny because Frankie said, too, that he's got to go study. So he's getting ready as well.
He better. If I beat him in this, he's in trouble.
This will be fun to see how we do this year for the Eclipse Awards. Coming up. I think it's coming up this weekend, actually. All right, so we're going to do that on Friday. And then I wanted to say thank you for everybody who commented yesterday. It was a busy Tuesday on the Facebook page about the – I'm not the only one that has trouble with those darn hay nets. Hay nets were the top topic of conversation yesterday. And I am not the only one. As a matter of fact, Lynn Lipford said, my husband hates them and even tossed one 2 days ago. I just went and picked it up and tied it, kissed his cheek and said, patience, dear. No, there's no patience when you're dealing with those hay nets. It's just frustration. So, thank you to everybody that commented on there. Appreciate that.
No, you cannot skip over this because I need you to go look at Facebook and see, oh my God, the cutest thing that my mother sent me, the cutest thing ever, ever. This is a baby.
It looks fake.
It is not fake because I hear the whole story behind this whole thing is it is a giraffe that was born at Chester Zoo in the United Kingdom, and she's unusually small. She was a couple weeks early, so she actually could not nurse off her mom because her mom was too big. And this is the first calf for the mom, whose name is Faye, and the baby's name is Margaret. She was almost 5 feet tall, not quite, and usually they're a lot larger than that. So because she couldn't nurse from her mother, they're hand-rearing her, and it's the cutest thing ever. Awesome.
Look at the chest on that baby.
There's a couple other pictures. Jennifer, if you're bored and you want to post another one, the one of the close-up of her face, oh, my gosh, with the big doughy eyes. Oh, it's so cute. And they have, like, the natural eyeliner. It's so beautiful. So what we're talking about.
I like this better than the sloth.
It is a very cute baby giraffe that is like Jennifer just typed to me, it's an oversized petite lap giraffe, if you recall. Petite lap giraffe. This one would probably crush you if it was in your lap, but it would be worth it because it's the cutest thing.
That is funny. And the stance that the baby has in this picture is just like planted. It's like, all right.
Give me that bottle.
Very cute.
Oh, yeah,
very cute. All right, it's time for Crappy List Wednesday. And before we get to the crappy list, I've got two lottery stories I want to tell you real quick. You know, we used to talk about lottery all the time, whenever there's fun stories to come up. Well, imagine you went out on Christmas Eve and you lived in Pennsylvania and you went to Wesley's restaurant in Elkton, and it was on December 23rd, and you went there and you had your dinner and everything, And then you decided that you were going to, on the way out, you saw these lottery tickets saying that they sell lottery tickets. You thought, well, it's Christmas Eve and everything, and I'll just stop by and buy a lottery ticket. And you look and you see, well, Mega Millions and Powerball, which one do I play? The Mega Millions jackpot is larger, but Powerball is tonight. So I'll just buy a couple of tickets for Powerball. And then you forget about your spur of the moment purchase, and you go out for the holiday season. And then on Christmas morning, you decide to check the numbers. And on Christmas morning, you discover that you have won $125 million on Christmas morning. So you call your wife down, and she comes down the stairs and says, "What's up here?" And you tell her that you have just won the lottery. Well, apparently, when she got to her husband, her husband's hands were shaking so bad that he could barely hold the ticket. And she thought he was, like, having a heart attack, but he wasn't. He had just discovered that he had won the lottery. Now, after taxes and taking the lump sum and everything, they will walk away with $56 million. Not bad for Christmas Day, huh? So, Merry Christmas to those two.
No kidding. Oh, my God. Oh, here's $56 million. Merry Christmas. That's a pretty good Christmas present.
Yeah, I don't think that's a Christmas you're never, ever going to forget. Now, they've decided to remain anonymous, which, by the way, I think is a great idea when you win the lottery. So they're going to remain anonymous. They're from Pennsylvania, and they did come forward. Their lawyer came forward for them, and well, they'll be collecting their check. Now, the second one is a bizarre story out of Iowa. There was a lottery ticket for $14 million that was left unclaimed. And, you know, after lottery tickets go a year, you can't claim them anymore. Once that year mark is up, that's it. It's done. You come in a day later, you don't get the money. Well, a lawyer representing a trust walked in 2 hours before this ticket was due to expire, 2 hours before it was due to expire, and claimed that they had won. And he was representing a trust that had been developed for this. Well, the lottery officials are a little concerned now because, why wait till 2 hours? Why take the chance that you get stuck in traffic and all of a sudden you've lost this ticket? Who does that? So they're kind of concerned that there might be fraud involved with this one, so they're actually doing an investigation. Many people have called up the lottery office now and said that this ticket was theirs and it had been stolen. So they're going to take a closer investigation. They're glad that the people brought it in, that it appears to be a valid ticket, but they want to do, apparently they can do an investigation to make sure it was legally purchased, possessed, and presented are the rules. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with that story, but some intrigue around the lottery there in Iowa for $14
million. I'm curious, what number do I call to say that it's my ticket?
Apparently a lot of people have figured that number out.
That's fine. I don't know. Somebody stole it and they sent it in. I've just been holding on to it. I was trying to get there 1 hour before just for a good story. Yeah, it's kind of that's a really bizarre story. I mean, why would you wait all that long to cash in your lottery ticket? So it sounds kind of like a bad idea. And it sounds bad. Well, I do
that.
Yeah,
it does. I tell you what, it's interesting. I don't know. We'll see what happens with it. All right, now the time of my list, my crappy list Wednesday. And I have the top 10 shockingly rich celebrities. These are celebrities that you're kind of surprised are that rich. So I have the top 10 of these. I love talking about these stories about the rich celebrity. So do you have any guesses who would be on this list?
Let's see. Shockingly rich, I would have to say, because I just do not know how these girls continue to make so much money, but every time you hear about them, they have more money than you can imagine. So I would say that one of the most shockingly rich celebrities would have to be two, Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen, the former Olsen twins from Family. What's the name of that show? Oh, Lord,
yes.
I'll get it here.
Yes, I know which one you mean. they should be on this list because you're right. They are shockingly rich. they are not on the list, but they should be on this list. I'm sure they fall somewhere in this range that we're going to talk about today, but they should be on this list for sure.
Are these celebrities that we know? Are these celebrities we're like,
yeah, some of
really?
Them. Some of them you're going to know.
Okay.
Like number 10 on the list is Brian Williams, Birdman, who is the co-founder of Cash Money Records, a rap label.
Uh-huh.
So, and he was born in New Orleans as a poor boy and is now worth in excess of $100 million putting out rap music.
I've got a guess.
So, okay.
I would have to say that probably shockingly rich because this person to me is a no-talent clown. would have to be, and I'm going to get emails. Go ahead. Send them. I don't care. Carrot Top. Is Carrot Top on the list?
No, he's not on the list. Do you know he's still performing out in Vegas every night?
I know. That's what I'm saying. And then he started working out all the time, and now he looks freakish with these huge muscles. And
really?
And he's, oh, my God. He's like a bodybuilder now, Glenn.
I didn't know that.
I'll find a picture of him and send it to you because you will be like, gross. He's disgusting. He's got, you know, whatever. It's Carrot Top. But he's, so I guess he's not on the list.
Nope, not on the list. How about Giselle? I don't even know how to say her last name. Bunchen. The bottle. Thank you. From Brazil. By the way, her net worth now from being a model in Brazil is over $250 million. Pays to be a model when you're good looking. And wasn't she the one that was dating Leonardo?
I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about the fact that she was dating my former ex-husband.
And she married to Brady, the quarterback for New England, I think.
Again, hate her. I hate her because I want to be her.
$250 million in excess. Now, number 8 on the list is, and he made this money since he went to satellite radio, and you probably have a guess after I said, give you that little hint.
Howard Stern.
Net worth? $500 million.
That is that's terrible. I'm
when
sorry,
are we
going to
make $500 million? I want to go to satellite radio.
Yeah, that's never going to happen. I would like to tell you that I just tried to post a picture of Carrot Top, but I could not find one where it would be appropriate. Why is he almost naked working out in all these pictures? Gross.
Oh, Carrot Top almost naked. That's gross.
just Google Carrot Top and do the image search because I can't post. I can't do this to our listeners. I can't. It's disgusting. I'll save you guys. There you go. You're on your own.
By the way, Howard Stern is currently the highest paid radio figure in the United States, even above Rush Limbaugh, who's number 2. You know, as far as talk shows on TV, Oprah Winfrey was number 1 at $2.7 billion, her net worth. And David Letterman in at $400 million, Simon Cowell, $320 million, Dr. Phil, $200 million. Ellen DeGeneres, $85 million.
She's poor. She's so broke, poor thing, compared to everybody else.
Apparently, being a talk show host on daytime TV pays pretty well.
What about Ricky Lake?
Ricky Lake's not on that list, but you know who else is probably on that list is the chef lady. Help me out. The short chef, Rachel Ray, who's probably worth $100 million. You see her stuff everywhere. It's amazing.
What about Martha Stewart? You see her stuff everywhere, too.
Did you hear her show has been canceled now?
Martha Stewart? It's because of the really bad impression I did of her over Christmas.
Her show has now been officially canceled on whatever strange network she was on. And she now, for the first time in like 20 years, will not have a TV show. Ratings were not there. She has less listeners than most local radio stations have, they said. It was bad.
No kidding.
Yeah, it was bad. Her fame is done. Number 7 on the list, Magic Johnson, estimated net worth of $500 million. So,
oh,
Urban
my
Magic
God.
Johnson. Yeah, I know. $500 million for Magic Johnson. Now, he hasn't played, you know, It's been a long time, but he, talk about endorsements. That man had more endorsements than anybody. 500 million. Number six on the list, Jerry Seinfeld, worth more than $800 million. And part of the reason is his show is in syndication forever, and they made a ton of those shows, 10 years worth. So that's part of the reason that he was he is that way. He also was paid $10 million in 2008 to do those crappy Microsoft ads that got canceled with Bill Gates. He was paid $10 million to do that. Everything he does just makes him money. So he just keeps making money. Bono, number five, worth $1 billion.
Bono, would like to wonder how much I have donated to Bono's cause. Because I have been to see his concert so many times, and I have bought all the records, and I have the T-shirts, and I have this, and I have that. And Bono, if he tells me to donate money somewhere, I do it. I can't help it. He tells me to. It's like he speaks to me, and he'll be like, $1.org, you need to throw $100 to them, Jamie. And I'm like, okay, here's $200. I don't know what happened.
Well, Bono did something very wise. In 2010, Bono invested in a little company called Facebook. He put in $200 million into Facebook, and they're estimating that that is now valued at $700 million. So,
sell!
Now, number four on the list is, it doesn't surprise me. I mean, it's surprising in that she has grown in the last 10 years into one of the wealthiest women in the world, and 10 years ago, or 10, 12 years ago, she was sitting in her tiny little room on welfare with her baby beside her, writing a few little books.
Oh, Harry Potter. J.K. Rowling.
J.K. Rowling, estimated net worth now is over $1 billion.
Wow. awesome.
The last two Harry Potter books, Half-Blood Prince and Harry Potter the Deathly Hallows, sold 9 and 11 million copies, respectively, within 24 hours of their release.
What?
Yes, that's right. There were lines around the building at night for those that, when they went on sale. So the Harry Potter movies have grossed over $7.5 billion. Unbelievable. Just goes to show you, though, you got creativity and a lot of fortitude. She had been turned down by every publishing house in England before this one finally picked her up. Boy, can you imagine how many people got fired that turned her down? Who turned her down? You're out.
Seriously, think we need to start writing a book together, Glenn, about some sort of...
Oh, yeah, my English is so good. I win so many words with friends. You and I would make a great book. That would be terrific.
That's what your editor's for, Glenn.
Number three on the list is, and this doesn't surprise me because her dad is filthy rich, and that's Julia Louis-Dreyfus, estimated net worth at $3 billion.
Really?
$3 billion. Yep. She had two half-sisters, Emma and Phoebe, and Emma and Phoebe are also going to inherit a large portion of the family fortune. She just apparently has a she just played in a series on HBO called Veep, where she played a vice president. So I don't know.
Wait, who is her dad?
Her dad is, oh, you didn't know this? Her dad is a investment mogul. He does development management and investment properties and in Europe, and he retired, I guess, not too long ago. The company was managed by her father. His name is Gerard, and it was an investment company that did commodities trading and merchandising and things like that, worth billions and billions of dollars. So she's a rich kid.
Yeah, I guess so. I had no idea. So, yeah, but she's still the funniest woman, I swear. That's Elaine from Friends. Elaine from Seinfeld.
But she's not bad looking either. I'm going to throw that in there.
Okay, thanks.
Number two, if I say Star Wars, does somebody come to mind?
George Lucas.
$3.25 billion for George Lucas.
I was thinking the guy that played Luke Skywalker, but probably not.
No. No. George Lucas. Yep. $3.2 billion. And number one of the most unexpected celebrities, Giorgio Armani. Giorgio Armani, the fashion designer, is worth over $7 billion. Now, Giorgio is the one that looks like he has the spray-painted tan with the super white teeth. And
yes,
I think he's like 800 years old now. Giorgio Armani, worth $7 billion. There you go. Top 10 list of the most weirdest unexpected celebrities.
Wow. Someday, Glenn. Someday, somebody sitting in our position is going to be reading a list about the celebrities that have gotten so huge starting out in podcasting, and our names are going to be right up there.
There's hope. There's hope. Look at J.K. Rowling. She was nothing on welfare. And look how popular she is now.
I know. We got to invent something, Glenn. We have to invent something. God, I say that all the time.
That.
I mean,
Howard Stern got that way by talking, except his kind of talking is a little different than our kind of talking.
I can't do that kind of stuff.
All right, let's talk about, speaking of talking, let's talk about our sponsor for this half hour, and then we're going to get to Shona Koresh, who's going to be talking about how to help your kids train their horses and ponies better. So Jennifer's going to lead that discussion, as always, with Shona. An interesting training discussion today. But first, audible.com. You know, you can get the Rowling books. You can get all the Harry Potter books at audible.com, and you can listen to the digital versions of those books. None of us have time to sit down anymore and open up a hard paper book and actually read it and flip the pages and everything. I listen to books on Audible when I'm traveling, especially on trips. We listen to books when, if you're going to the gym, a lot of people listen to Audible books at the gym. They have over 100,000 titles to choose from now. You can play them on almost any device. There's over 250 devices that you can use, iPhone, Kindle, Android, any iPod or any kind of MP3 player you can play it on. They have a whole list on their website. You can just check it out there. We have listened, Jennifer and I, to over 100 books since 2004. It's perfect for horse people. If you're on those long drives to horse shows.
Hold up. You have listened to that many books, and your vocabulary is as poor as it is right now in the Scrabble game?
I didn't say I absorbed. I didn't absorb the books. I listened to the books.
Okay, carry on. Sorry.
Special offer right now for Audible listeners. You can get a free audiobook download and a 14-day free trial just by going to audibletrial.com/HRN for Horse Radio Network. audibletrial.com/HRN to get your free audiobook. That's audibletrial.com/HRN. Enjoy your free book. Choose from 100,000 titles, and they're adding bunches every day. All right, Jennifer, you're going to take the way here as we say good morning to Shona. Good morning, Shona.
Well, good morning.
We've just been talking about celebrities and lotteries and all kinds of stuff this morning. We're all over.
Yeah, and I was listening. It's kind of amazing, the list.
Yeah, and you know, someday, you believe, Jamie, we're going to be rich and famous, aren't we? We're going to be on that.
I do. I can see it now.
Okay. Shona has faith in us.
Glenn and Jamie will be the unlikely part of the list. I don't know about the rich part.
Very unlikely.
So when you were working for SeaWorld in California, did you get to meet any interesting and fascinating and filthy rich celebrities?
Oh, sure. I got to meet Johnny Carson. I got to meet I got to meet Steven Spielberg and Richard Dreyfuss and Bruce Springsteen and who else? The Dalai Lama.
Really? I've never heard of any of those people ever.
And they're all poor.
Poor. No names.
The Dalai Lama.
No names, all of them. Wow, that's cool.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it was kind of fun. And it was kind of neat because they would come, you know, so they come backstage and they would be interested to meet you, which was just a turnaround. They'd be all like, hi, you know, and talking to you about what you do. So I think it was kind of refreshing for them, too, you know. So it was fun. And there were all usually pretty nice. I met the Judds. You know, I met a bunch of people.
The Judds?
Was there any of them that surprised you and you went, oh, they were rude?
Well, a little bit.
Can I make a guess? Can I make a guess?
Okay, yes.
Okay, Jane Fonda.
No, no. You know, you just feel like you don't really want to say. But, you know, kind of would come off, it would be kind of standoffish, like I'm too cool for this. And then, then they would kind of come around because, the little kid in them got the best of them. You know what I mean? So they, like, I'm too cool for this. I'm beyond this. I'm like, ooh, can I pet it? You know, and stuff. So they would always kind of come around. So
now, how about Johnny Carson? I heard he was pretty shy. He's just shy. He wasn't rude. He was just shy.
Yeah, and he was actually very sweet. He was really interested and very sweet and humble. You know, he was just really nice. Yeah, so I think it's because the setting has changed. So, you know, you're not approaching them or meeting them in a work environment. They're coming to, you know, they're there for fun to see what you're doing. And so it really kind of changes it around. Well, it was kind of fun, too, is Luke Perry, you know, from Beverly Hills 90210. He was he was watching. I was doing the Sea Lion Otter show at this time, and you could see somebody up there watching the show, slapping their leg, laughing, you know. And so got to meet him after the show, and he invited me and one of the other trainers to go onto the set of Beverly Hills 90210. So that was kind of fun. Got to do that.
Oh, cool.
Did he try to make out with you? Is that what happened?
Yeah, you know, he kept trying, but I just had to get the fish out of my hands first. Let me put these down.
Yeah, let me wash up a little bit, Luke. Sorry. Feeling you so dreamy.
So today, Shauna, we an up and coming young, perhaps superstars with their ponies. What prompted this question for me, Shauna, is I was surfing around YouTube looking for a silly video to post on the Horse Tip Daily Facebook page, just because I like to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I came across a little tiny home video of somebody's 8 or 10-year-old kid doing on-target training with their pony. Now that I'm thinking about it, no, it wasn't even 10. This was a little tiny kid.
Uh-huh.
And the adult was holding the camera and using the clicker. So the pony would do something right, and the adult, you could hear it click, but the little tiny kid was in charge of shoving the cookie into the pony's face. And it was so adorable. So this is a great way to teach little tiny kids from the get-go that there's a request and reward system involved when you're around an animal. Because the kid was probably 6 years old.
It's a great, great tool for kids. And what's kind of funny is I find, and it's kind of ironic, I think, I find kids to be the best trainers. And I think it's partly because their head isn't so convoluted with what they've read or what they've heard. They, you know, you kind of give them a little bit and go, this is kind of the thing, you know, you give them a little premise.
Mm-hmm.
But you just watch them, and they watch the animals, they watch the horses, and they respond to what they're seeing. You know what I mean? They're just focused mm-hmm. on this works, this doesn't work in a subconscious way. It's like it's pure and natural and simple for them. And I love to see that.
Do you think the body, the ability to read interspecies body language hasn't been trained out of a little kid yet?
Exactly. Yes, it's kind of like it's that. I've always felt like training animals is part science because there's behavior principles, proven behavior principles that are at work, and understanding them helps you. But it's a lot of art, you know. It's a lot of feel and reading and touching and instinct and kind of thinking, you know, this one needs this, this one needs that, and that takes just that intuitive looking and watching, and that's exactly it. I think the kids are it's still pretty pure and natural, you know. That's just still. It's still there, where they're just watching and responding without going, well, you know, I should be, you know, putting the, you know, and without
yeah.
getting so much knowledge kind of, you know, I think that, yeah, just like you said, I think as we get older, we kind of get more into what we've learned as opposed to what we feel and trusting that. You know, we tend to go back to what we've read or what we've been told or, you know, and I think we, it's kind of a, it can hamper us when it comes to
training. Well, we have a different expectation, too. As an adult, we've become accustomed to being in charge of any given situation, whether it be an animal or a young person. I suspect that we look at them the same way. So we expect a result versus a child frequently has not been in a position where they can make a request and expect a result beyond mommy, I got to go potty, or daddy, can you get me a biscuit? So it's not familiar territory for them to have a great expectation. So are they more likely to notice the pony? Okay, the pony's supposed to touch his target. The pony tries to touch the target. That child is a lot more likely to go, oh, goody, he tried, than perhaps a lot of adults would.
Yes, yes, exactly. It's kind of like it's just more pure joy. You know what I mean? There's less ulterior motive. There's less, you know, agenda, and it's just in the moment and enjoying it. And they do catch the little things that we're thinking, but that's not a can or depart, even though it's like the beginning of it, you know, or whatever it might be. So, yeah, I think
stepping over your own lips, that wasn't a can or depart. But I tried. I just happened to trip over my lips trying. Okay, I can relate to that. Beaker's tripping over his lips right now, so I can relate to that one. Okay, I have to channel my inner seven-year-old right now.
And you know what? If we all would, we would be, you know, if we would just stop and kind of be more in the moment, it would help us as trainers, too, because it is. Channel our little children.
Okay, so as an adult or a young person that's in a position that you have the opportunity, either formally or informally, train young people, what's a good way to introduce the concept to kids that are in that 9 to 14 age range? How do you introduce the concept to them?
Well, you know, the beauty of the positive reinforcement training, the operant conditioning, is it really follows a certain common sense. You know, so when you say, well, your pony won't come to you in the paddock because he's out there playing with his friends and eating grass and you expect him to work, they kind of get that. You know, I mean, or anybody does. You're like, oh, yeah, of course, that makes so much sense. So how do you change it? So I like to start a lot of times with teaching them something simple. It's not the riding where you're having to deal with what you're physically doing in your body and your hands and your seat and your legs and your heels and your, but teach them something on the ground that's fun to do. And then, but during that lesson, they start learning how they can affect personality or affect behavior, you know, so they start realizing and putting together the concepts, which kind of go along with what is already naturally happening. It's just being a little bit more aware of it. So I find just teaching them something fun and simple to do, even just targeting, is, you know, and is a great tool. You can teach them to target. You can teach them to stationary target. You can teach them about. It's a little bit more complicated then, but just even teaching them to target, they start to put together the correlation between their actions and the response and then the consequences for the horse and how it can affect things. So if they can grasp that concept early on, it can help them as they go on to riding and understanding more about. I mean, I think it's kind of, there's two points here that I think are kind of funny. One is that that when I first started riding, you know, I didn't really, you know, I was an animal trainer. I was at SeaWorld, so I kind of came into it as an adult, but a kid too in a way. And I remember, like, you know, learning things like put your heels down, do this, do that. And I would ask kids who are equitation kids who are winning big classes and have, you know, six-figure horses that they're riding, and you would ask them, you know, well, why do you, and this is just for me, my, you know, own wondering how much they understand, you know, why do you get your heels down? It's because their trainer told them to, you know, not
right.
Understanding that it's a, you know, it's a pivotal point of our balance and, you know, and just, so I think kind of as they learn by, you know, mimicking or hearing, the more they can comprehend it, I think the more lasting and the more effective they'll be. And then the other thing that I think is kind of amazing is that there's a lot of professionals, I mean, Olympic-level professionals that are riding and training that know very little about true behavior principles that are at work there. I mean, we understand about utilizing the aids and how they work, but to understand all the principles behind it which only makes us better trainers. The more we can understand, the better we can be as trainers. But it's so I think that if we can educate, you know, the kids early on about some of these principles, which are not, when you put them into context with a practical situation where you're teaching them to do something, I think they can absorb them very quickly, and it helps them just to be have a better understanding, which then helps them along the way.
Now,
another thing that's go ahead.
Prompt the question, and I'm going to write it down while you continue. You go, I'm going to write down my question.
Okay, and another thing I've seen a lot of trainers do, which I think is a great tool kind of when you get to the riding, and this is really good for kind of the more timid rider, whether they be adult or they be children, is a lot of time I've seen the trainers, by teaching them that they have some control over the behavior, by teaching them to teach something else, it's helped them to become bolder and braver as riders and trainers and understanding how much they can affect behavior. And they will, and there's also been times when I've seen the trainers, and this I've done this too, where you, the trainer can click, and like you said in the video, and then the kid can reinforce. So now as you're teaching a kid to, you know, to do something, and you see the ponies doing it, but maybe the child or adult isn't good enough with their aids to properly release them, you know, the trainer then can click and go, now that was good at this point. So it draws attention to that moment in time, and it lets it be processed. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Right. That's kind of like traditionally, if you want to call it that, many, many riding students as well as riding instructors, you use a lunge line. You put the student on the horse on the lunge line because you want to let them practice a certain skill set, because they're not quite ready for independence yet, and that's kind of like operant conditioning on a lunge line.
it really is. You're exactly right.
Yeah, so something I thought of, this comes from some work that I did with other folks, teaching, and this might be really fun for the 14 to 16 set, because they will understand the concepts pretty quickly. One of the things that I saw somebody do once to introduce the concept of operant conditioning or positive reward-based training was they put the students in a group, and the instructor didn't tell them what was about to happen. She just kind of basically lined them up in the middle of an indoor arena. There they stood. They had no idea what was going to happen next.
Mm-hmm.
The instructor had a clicker in their hand. And every so often, this group of 13, 14, 15-year-olds heard this thing click, and the person who looked at the instructor got chucked a piece of candy. Only the person who looked at the instructor. And she went through this process, and after about 20 minutes, a couple of the kids figured out that if they walked toward a specific part of the arena, they got chucked a piece of candy.
Mm-hmm.
And then she brought them all back together and said, okay, what did we just learn here? And it was just a way of her showing the kids, really, that's where your horse is.
Uh-huh.
He has no idea that you plan on doing canter de parts today. He really doesn't know that. You can tell him that 100 times while you're grooming him. Honey, we're going to do canter de parts today. We did canter de parts yesterday, and we're going to do canter de parts tomorrow because we really suck and we need practice. He doesn't know that.
Right. And, you know, it's like we're speaking a foreign language to them. Sometimes I think about this when, you know, and when I watch training situations or if in a training situation and try and think, this is like a foreign language. If you just sit there and somebody keeps poking you and you're going, I don't understand, you know, I mean, how frustrated would you be? But if we can break it down to make it where they can kind of understand that, oh, okay, that means I did something right. Let me process. What did I do right? And it's a great tool, but you're totally right. They just sit there going, I don't know. You know, another thing I've done a lot in clinics, and it's something we did at SeaWorld too, and it's something that helps people, is we call it the training game. And when I would do it in clinics, I would get $20. I'd get $20 in $1 bills, and I'd do it for money because money is a conditioned reinforcer. It would mean nothing if we went to a desert island. We wouldn't care about money because it would have no value without our society. But we have built it up and given it established value, just like the clicker. The clicker is a conditioned reinforcement. It needs nothing until we condition it. Money is just paper until we've conditioned it. But I would, I would do the training game, and I would, you know, click as people got. So I would send the person out of the room, And then we'd all sit and go, okay, let's pick out something we want to teach them to do. And then we could even use the target if we wanted to, kind of assuming that they know the target means to follow them. So it helps set them up for success. So we could target them towards a corner of the arena or on a thing or bending over or whatever we wanted to do. And then you just, I would click and reinforce each time. And giving them money is something they value. Like for the horses, you know, the food is something they value. And so it really sets it up where they're like, ooh, I want this. And so it was. It's kind of a fun way to see it working. And I used to do it, so I did it. I do it with a positive reinforcement way, utilizing the money. I used to also do it with where I just poke them with my finger to kind of get the same behavior, to get them, you know, to a corner or to bend over. And what I quit doing it because I would find people get a little, you know, a little cranky, you know, when you would be doing that. They wouldn't inadvertently get mad. But you would see their face and their body, and they start looking at you like, cut it out. And I thought that was really demonstrative of, because I didn't really anticipate that. I thought, oh, I can teach them this way and that way. And then you saw that attitude was a little like, you know, you're annoying me. And I realized, and it was little. I'm just poking them, just touching them. But, you know, it's like Chinese water torture after a bit.
Yeah.
So.
Well, the horse feels the same way. If he's clueless.
Uh-huh.
And,
we just keep poking and poking and poking. And they're going, what? Get off my face. Get out of my side. Whatever you're doing. Yeah, so I think that the more we can teach kids to understand, just the better it's going to be. So there's a lot of things that kids could do. And the cool thing is kids really love just being with their horses. You know, I mean, that tends to be more than the lessons, you know.
Yeah.
So it's a great place for them to just, you know, use their little imaginations, but to teach anything, just teach them to pick up their legs, to go retrieve a ball, to go, but it all teaches them the principles behind it, and it's really a fun thing to watch.
So we take kids of any age, whether they be 9 or 90, because some of us are kids regardless, a great way to freshen up schooling for young people or people who are just, you know, they got the, they're in a stalemate, great way to introduce the concept of positively affecting behavior for somebody who's either shy or innately aggressive because they don't know how that all works. So use your upper conditioning. Go to On Target Training with Shauna Koresh, ontargettraining.com, and check it out. It's great for kids. It's great for adults. It's great for little horses and big horses. And thanks for stopping by. This has been fascinating, as usual.
Well, thank you. It has been my pleasure. I always look forward to my time with you guys.
Hey, we'll see ya.
Okay,
thanks,
bye.
Shauna.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Jennifer. Appreciate that. Very interesting stuff for teaching kids how to teach. That's what it comes down to. Well, this half hour is brought to you by FeedXL. FeedXL is the place that you go to find out if you are doing right by your horse. If you find that you want to find out if you're feeding your horse correctly, stop by to FeedXL.com. So you take a couple minutes. It'll only take you that long to put in information about you, about your horse, about what you feed your horse, and they're going to analyze everything you put into your horse's mouth to print out some very fancy reports. That'll show you whether you're feeding too much or too little. A lot of people save money by going to FeedXL.com because they find out they're giving supplements they don't need to give, or they can tweak this feed, or they're feeding too much grain and not enough hay, or vice versa. So you can find all of that out by going to FeedXL.com and just taking the few minutes that it takes to put in the information about your horse and then to keep up on it on a regular basis to keep adjusting because, you know, winter is different than summer. So if you did this over the summer, it's time to go back and do it again over the winter. That's FeedXL.com. Today's song is I cannot say this word, Jamie. It's
Tucumcari Woman.
Thank you. Thank you. Tucumcari Woman. I don't know why I play the song because I can't say the word. I challenge you to try and play Tucumcari sometime in Words with Friends. Challenge you
can't
there.
Can't do it. Too many letters.
All right, Tucumcari Woman by Dan Roberts, oldbootsmusic.com. We're going to be back with some talk about gory gross eyeballs.
Tucumcari lips like petals of a rose. To come carry, to come carry, woman, I want to carry you home. I'm a Bronco Buster and I hail from Abilene. Traveled from hell to Hilary, but you're the first one that I've seen that I'd marry. Oh yeah, I'd marry. To come carry, woman, I want to carry you home.
The song is To Come Carry Woman. You're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network, brought to you today by Audible.com. And I've got an amazing story. And there's got to be some women out there that have had this kind of same thing happen. You know, when you're sitting there at your house or at your boarding stable and all the horses start looking over at something in the distance, you know, and you're like, what are they looking at? What are they looking at? Horses have that amazing sense to kind of know what's going on and kind of sense what's good and what's bad. Does that make sense to you, Glenn?
Yeah, they do, for sure. Yep.
Well, it has made the news in eastern Arizona. A man named Larry Larson, who lives in Graham County, told the Eastern Arizona Courier that he had gotten up really early on Sunday morning to go hunting. And he decided, you know, it was really early, but he was going to go ahead and feed the horses early and go check on them. He said he walked over there and he said that they were attentively watching the neighbor's house. All of his horses were like lined up, snorting and staring at the neighbor's house. So he's like, that's weird. So he threw some food, he threw some grain in there. All the horses ignored it. And he thought, okay. Seriously, the horses never ignore food. There is something going on. So he walks over, kind of sneaks over to where he can see his neighbor's house, and he spies the outline of a man in the back of the house. The guy walks up to the house and goes to the car and tries to break into the car. Well, Larry Larson was going hunting, and Larry Larson had a gun. So Larry Larson shoots two shots into the air, tells his wife to call the police. The offender was found with two pistols and ammunition in a backpack, a knife in his pocket. He had drugs on him, and he was totally caught by Larry Larson's horses. Round of applause.
Good job, Larry Larson's horses.
Isn't that fantastic? Here you go, Larry Larson's horses.
Are they being deputized?
Seriously, they should be deputized because that's fantastic. And as a woman, you know, I being on this farm a lot of times, you know, unfortunately, Chad travels a lot with his work and I'm home alone. Well, I'm not kidding you. Between the dogs and the horses, I really feel like they would let me know. You know, they would let me know if something's going on, if somebody's in the property. And, of course, as soon as I read this story this morning, I'm like, what are they doing out there? I heard a whinny. You know, I'm all paranoid. But that's just an
and
awesome
I think
story.
Arizona's one of those states, too, isn't it, that shoot first, ask questions later? I think it's one of those states. This guy's lucky he didn't get one in the between the eyes.
Yeah, this is the Wild West out here. You shoot first, ask questions later. Come on. I got to get a gun. Or, no, we have a gun. I just don't have any bullets. I could really
need to learn
somebody
to shoot
up
the
with
gun.
A rifle. I'll hit you with this gun. Come on in. I will hit you so hard.
But first, let me get my stepladder, then I'll hit you with my gun.
Thanks. Short jokes. Love them. should we do another story?
Yes,
or is that there? Are they ready?
Yes, we're ready.
Okay. Well, we've got Michelle from thehorse.com. Michelle joins us every single week to do what they can to... Glenn, go ahead and play it.
I'm going to have to because it's gross today.
It's time for the weekly health report from thehorse.com. Fantastic information and their attempt to ruin Glenn's lunch every week.
And that is what we're going to attempt to do. Glenn, you make sure that you are sitting down, buckle your seatbelt, because it's time today, ladies and gentlemen, to talk about eyeballs. Eyeballs today.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I've been looking to gross Glenn out since I started. It's only been a couple of weeks.
I was liking you. You're the new girl, and you were good, and it was fine, and everything. I want Christy back now.
I'm sorry, and I'm bummed out that it's my own horse that I'm going to be grossing you out with. Maggie is having an eye issue, and I've invited Dr. Richard McMullen to talk horse eyes with us today. He's an assistant professor of ophthalmology at North Carolina State University at their College of Veterinary Medicine over there. So is he with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, doctor.
Good morning.
So I called him up after I started having this issue with Maggie. We lease a halflinger mare for my husband. Her owners live in Florida, and they have a vacation ranch here in Bend, Oregon. And they had her for all fall. She was at the ranch with them. And I went to pick her up after the holidays, and you know they had sent a text saying, you know, her eye is kind of gooey. Could you take a look at it and maybe put some ointment in it? So I got her home, and I was like, yeah, her eye is pretty icky, but it seems weird because it's January. We don't have any flies. There's really no reason for her eye to be nasty. So I started looking a little bit closer, and I saw something, unfortunately. And it looked to me like a squamous cell carcinoma. I've dealt with those on a gelding who had them on a sheath and penis, and that didn't go well. So I didn't actually say it out loud. Like, I was like, there's something wrong with her eye. I'm going to have my vet out. So I had my vet out. He looked at it. He didn't say anything either, and he said to call the specialist we have, Dr. Lowe. She's an ophthalmologist here in Bend, and she took a look. So one of the cool things, though, about my new job is I get to do a lot of research and talk to experts in the field. So Dr. McMullen here teaches about horse eyes, and he also recently treated cataracts on an elephant at the North Carolina Zoo. Do I have that correct, Dr. McMullen?
Yes, it is correct. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, with the surgery and the elephant?
Yeah.
Well, it was a kind of a long ongoing process because he developed cataracts in both eyes, but the second eye was a little slow to follow. It's a middle-aged elephant. And so it was kind of back and forth if he was going to undergo surgery or not to have the lens removed. And but he started to develop some pretty significant visual deficits and behavioral changes once the second eye caught up to the first one. And then he had some issues just with his training for the procedure because of his large size. He's a large bull, and I think he weighs about 14,000 pounds.
Wow,
and
a lot bigger than a horse.
Yeah, very much
wow.
so.
Wow.
And they were training him to lie down on a specific side because we, at that time, were planning to do the more affected eye. And he must have injured himself during the training and was unable to get up after the training incident. So it got pushed off, and finally he developed cataracts in both eyes, which made it...
I'm sorry about that. And so did that come out positively?
It did. He's doing very well. He recovered from the surgery. Great. We couldn't have asked for it to go any better, actually.
And so I'm hoping that Miss Maggie comes out of her surgery as well with Dr. Lowe doing that today. Right after the show, I'm actually putting her in the trailer and taking her to the clinic. But I was wondering if you could explain to us a little bit about the squamous cell carcinoma in the eye and what that is and what a horse owner would be looking for.
Right. And when we talk about, well, squamous cell carcinoma is a form of cancer or neoplasia that develops in the horse. And although it's seen elsewhere in the body, of course, we're concerned with different presentations that will be either on the eyelids, the third eyelid itself, or on the conjunctiva or the cornea itself from the eyeball. And so they're generally all three of these different areas or locations where they will occur are very different and will also affect the outcome of treatment quite significantly. Mm-hmm. There are many factors that have been considered to contribute to the development of squamous cell carcinoma, such as UV rays from sunlight and light-colored skin and hair coat in horses. It predisposes them to developing squamous cell carcinoma.
Are there certain breeds that are more prone to getting these because of their pigmentation?
There's been some draft breeds that have been predisposed or have been reported to have a predisposition for developing squamous cell carcinoma, such as a Belgians, and also Halflingers, Paint horses, Palominos, and other horses that have a light coat color are predisposed to or more prevalent, more prone to developing the disease.
Now, that's one thing that you definitely see a lot of out here in Phoenix, Arizona, is so many of the paint horses, because it's a very popular breed out here, and I just can't imagine why, because they've got these pink eyelids, these bald faces, these pink cheeks, and they're so susceptible to the skin cancer, and a lot of people think it's the UV rays coming from the sun. You know, obviously they get skin cancer from the sun and no shade out here. Even if you have shade, the sun reflects off the ground up to their sheath. It's very, very dangerous and prevalent out here. And I'm curious to know, Dr. McMullen, what you feel is the best treatment for this, because it seems to me like everybody has their own way.
Right, and that's a really sticky question to try and answer, and the reason for that is that there's a certain individual response to treatment in animals that's unpredictable, and so you could have two horses even from the same barn that have squamous cell carcinoma, for example, on the eyelid margin. You treat one with surgical resection and cryotherapy, so a cyclical freeze-thaw therapy of the area, and that tumor never comes back. Whereas you have another one that looks fairly small, you treat it the same, and it will recur time and time again. And so there are certainly underlying factors that come into play as well that we don't have a handle on. And so that's where it tends to be, tends to seem like a lot of people are doing a lot of different things to try and treat them and get them under control. And so one thing that is generally accepted is that surgical resection is necessary in most cases to get an adequate margin around the tissue, and then some sort of form of adjunctive therapy is necessary to prevent the recurrence and to increase the likelihood of having a non-reoccurrence or a positive outcome that the tumor does not come back. And there are several different options for treating those. And again, you kind of have to talk about the different locations of the tumors as well, because third eyelid squamous cell carcinoma, for example, is often just removing the third eyelid is often enough to prevent recurrence, but that probably has a lot to do with the location of the tumor in the third eyelid. They're often relatively small, and so if you remove the whole third eyelid, you're getting really good margins around that tumor.
Is there a way, I'm sorry to jump in here, Michelle, is there a way to prevent something like this from happening? Like people have the UV fly masks and all that kind of stuff, or is this something
right.
that's probably genetic?
Well, there's probably a genetic component to it, because there is certainly something that allows different horses to develop the disease. And not every horse that's standing out in pasture in sunlight is going to develop squamous cell carcinoma. So there's certainly a lot of questions that still need to be answered before we have a good handle on that aspect of it. And mm-hmm. you know, a couple of things that are done regularly to try and prevent that is, if you have a horse with no skin color or no pigment around its eyelids, is to have a wear a UV fly mask on a regular basis if it's outside during daylight hours. The other thing, which sometimes can be a little bit more difficult to manage, is to have turnout more in the evening hours or at night and keep them stalled during the day, just to decrease the amount of sunlight that they're exposed to. Granted, that's not always feasible, and that can be a lot more difficult than just wearing a fly mask. But other than that, periodic monitoring is probably the best way to not prevent a tumor from developing, but getting on top of it if it does develop early.
Now, with Maggie, I was really surprised by how quickly this came on. She had an ulceration on her cornea on the same eye this past summer, and we treated it really aggressively. She'd been scratching her face on a juniper tree and scratched her eye. And so we treated that, and I didn't at that time notice this growth in her eye. It was when she went away for a few months and then came back, and then I looked at her with fresh eyes and saw that something wasn't right. And this thing, I posted some photos to the horse.com's Facebook page, and it's just kind of this little thing in the back of her eye when you just look at it, but when you open up the eye and when Dr. Lowe got in there, you could see that it went way back and was really kind of ugly, much more than I expected it to be in the back of her eye. So what kind of things should horse owners be looking for that might indicate that their horse is having an eye issue or a vision issue?
Well, I think that luckily there are not a lot of things that will change around the horse's eye when something happens. They're either going to squint, they'll have some ocular discharge, or the appearance of the eye will change a little bit. And so even just making sure to do routine kind of a quick check every day to see, are you noticing ocular discharge that's different than what you've had in the past? And some horses will have a little bit of discharge, but if it's something that just starts, that should immediately trigger a warning flag to go up. And then if you notice any cloudiness of the cornea, so the clear part of the eye, if you notice any change to that part of the eye, those are certainly things that would merit having someone take a closer look at.
Okay.
And not everything
is
horrible, of course.
Sorry.
But
yeah. So my vet had stopped by and looked at her, and he referred me to an ophthalmologist or an eye specialist. When is that necessary to get a referral, and when can your general practice vet deal with these issues?
Well, and that's a very good question, because it really is going to depend an awful lot on the comfort level and ability of your regular veterinarian. There's a lot of practicing veterinarians that are very capable of dealing with a large number of ocular diseases and do a fantastic job with that. Having a good relationship with your veterinarian is helpful, because they will feel comfortable in talking about referral with you. And so anytime they get to a point where they feel a little bit uncomfortable, or where it's something that they think is a little bit more involved in what they're comfortable in dealing with, then those are really good times to talk about referral. I think in general, it's if you have an injury to the eye or a corneal ulcer, that's something that develops very acutely. It should not last longer than 5 to 7 days. Things should already start to get better. Now, you may have, if it's a large surface ulcer, the ulcer itself may be huge, and so it may take a little bit more time for that to heal, but you should see progression, positive progression. So that should heal within that 5 to 7 day window relatively well. And if that's not the case, then there's something underlying that is causing a problem. And that's where it really is important to have a discussion with the referring veterinarian who's taking care of your horse on a regular basis to say, okay, where are you at this point? Are you comfortable in dealing with it further? Or now I think it's time we get someone else involved if they don't offer that on their own. Because there generally is something underlying that's going on.
So talking about that 5 to 7 days of treatment, that would be under the care of your veterinarian.
Yes.
So if you do have something like an injury to the eye, is that something that the horse owner should get a vet involved right away, or is that something that they can work on themselves?
I would always recommend having your veterinarian take a look almost immediately. If you notice something acute, so something that just happens, even if you're gone and you have no idea what it was, but your horse is standing there uncomfortable, squinting, has some ocular discharge, its lids are closed or maybe swollen, definitely says someone should come and take a look. Horses are very prone to pretty severe traumatic injury as well, and it's not everything that happens to them is devastating. However, they do tend to injure themselves quite readily, and just by looking at their outward appearance, it's really difficult to determine what it is that's going on, and so they should be looked at very, very closely.
Well, yeah, I would say, and to jump in here, we're running out of time, but the rule at our farm is, and with anybody I talk to, if it has something to do with the eyeball, call the vet. You are not going to fix it yourself. You are not going to diagnose it. You are not going to be able to take care of it. Call the vet. If you see anything wrong with your horse's eyeball at all, it's just one of those things that you don't mess around with it, you know?
Right, no. Right. No, sure. I agree with that. That's a very good line to follow, actually.
Yeah, well, thank you, Dr. McMullen, for joining us.
Thank you.
Michelle, as always, I totally just friend requested you on Facebook.
Oh.
If I could find you, Dr. McMullen, I would.
awesome, James.
Can I
add one more thing really quick here? Yesterday's Horse Health newsletter from thehorse.com had some information about corneal ulcers and treating those. If anyone's interested in reading about that specifically, you can go into the archive under our newsletter drop-down menu. And then also, if you just search eye in our search bar, which is at the top of the page, you can find all sorts of stuff. I know that going through those archives was helpful for me in figuring out what was going on with Maggie and understanding my veterinarians and what we were dealing with. So check that out if you need to.
All right, that's thehorse.com. And you guys are both, thank you so much, and we hope to talk to you again very soon, Doctor, and we'll talk to you again next week, Michelle.
Michelle, good luck.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Michelle. All right.
Good luck with Maggie.
Thank you very much.
Oh, you poor thing.
Bye-bye. Yeah, bye-bye.
Wow, she's got a day ahead of her, doesn't she?
Oh, man, no kidding. It's just anything on there.
you know, you wish you could call the vet for every little thing. Oh, he got a cut. Oh, he is this. Oh, he is this. But, you know, financially, unfortunately, some of us are not afraid, not able to do that. So you can take some time to kind of treat stuff yourself or try to see if you can kind of get them fixed up yourself or, oh, it's far from their heart. They'll be fine. Eyeballs? No, definitely
yeah.
not. Nothing to do with that.
It's just, we've had situations with eyeballs, and there's also when, you know, you got something that they need drops every day, two or three, four or five times a day, that's just a nightmare, too, because they start to figure that out after about the first day, and you're going to be poking into their eyeballs, and they don't like it anymore, and that's difficult when you have a horse that decides, you're not putting that in my eye anymore. You just want to shake them and say, this is for your own good.
It's, I'm telling you, again, it goes back to what you always want to say to your horse. Like, if I go to blanket him at night and he tries to bite me. Listen, I know better than you, okay? I know what's good for you. I know it's going to get down to 37 degrees tonight and you're going to need your blanket. Or I know that your eyeball is going to fall out if you don't take this medicine. So you just sit down and you take it. They will never listen to that. They never do. I don't get it.
Hey, I have a health story, too. I have a health story. Can I do my health story? The study came out actually today in Bloomberg Magazine that, by the way, this is one of those duh studies, but I thought it related to horses, so that's why I'm doing it. Having both a car and a television raises the risk of heart attack, while owning livestock, including horses, reduces it, according to a study that looks at the links between possessions and physical activity. Those owning both a car and a television, by the way, that's 89 to 99% of the people in the United States, enables a sedentary lifestyle that had 27% increased risk of heart attack compared to those who own neither. However, owning cattle or other livestock, which requires some activity, reduces the risk by 22%. So you're going to be healthier just owning your horse, is what that comes down to. Like we didn't know that.
Well, exactly. And those of us who own horses know that. Those people that don't, they think we're crazy. You have how many horses? Why? Yeah, no, it definitely is a healthier way to go. Definitely.
Can I also give a shout out to, before we end the show today and then we'll get out of here, to Wells Fargo. We've had one of the drivers from Wells Fargo on of their fancy stagecoaches and quarter horse teams. On the shows before. Well, Wells Fargo did a good thing over the holidays. They donated more than 4,500 4-foot-tall Wells Fargo toy ponies. These are big 4-foot-tall stuffed ponies to nonprofit groups and schools across the United States, and many of who will auction them off to help raise funds. And you know, they do this almost every year, and they Wells Fargo's out there really trying to raise awareness about for various charities. But they also, you know, have this Wells Fargo, this stagecoach that they bring around. It was in the Rose Bowl parade. And what's unusual about the stagecoach is it is pulled by quarter horses, by American horses. So they try and get the word out about horses, and part of the way they do that is by giving away these huge 4-foot stuffed animals. So I give a shout-out to Wells Fargo for doing that.
I got to give a shout-out to one of our friends, Dominique Ferraro, who also owns Zebras R Us, has posted on our Facebook page. Jennifer posted about what about some world champion horses that you wouldn't expect. It would be Snowman the Plow Horse turned champion jumper, and Dominique posted that the champion horses she would not expect would be Flower, the movie star zebra. Flower is her zebra, who has made some minor appearances in some films. So that's fantastic. Movie star zebra time. And also because Glenn Forrester, whose birthday it is, happy birthday, and I have been doing a cute picture post-off. Okay.
I see that.
I posted a baby zebra, and he posted the cutest little picture of a foal in a feed bucket sleeping. And then I posted, or Jennifer helped me post, the picture of the baby zebra, then baby giraffe actually reaching for the bottle of milk. Then he posted a baby donkey.
So it's cuteness all over the place on the Horses in the Morning Facebook page. So definitely check that out today.
All right, very good. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us. We appreciate it. We'll be back again tomorrow morning here on Horses in the Morning. As I said, you can listen to the recorded version of this show just by going to our website, horsesinthemorning.com, or downloading it on iTunes. Just go to the podcast section and search for Horses in the Morning. Subscribe, and it'll automatically be downloaded to your iTunes every day and synced up to whatever device you have synced up to your iTunes account. And that's about it. Don't forget all the other shows on the Horse Radio Network. You can listen to them all at horseradionetwork.com. We'll be back again tomorrow. Have a terrific day, Jamie.
Everybody have a wonderful day, too. Please be thinking of, just on a side note, my husband has, like, the super battle today is what I call it. But it's, like, a bunch of students fighting a bunch of instructors. And there's, like, 25 guys out there that are going to be over the United States skies today fighting each other in mock wars. And it always really worries me when he's out there with that many planes zipping around. So just keep my husband in your thoughts today. These are the days that I get really nervous. So good luck to him in his, what I call the super battle. I'm sure there's some technical name for it, Glenn. You probably know what it is.
I have no idea.
I don't know. He's like, yeah, it's super battle day, honey. I'm like, oh no, super battles. I'm the only one that calls it that. so everybody please remember to spay, neuter, and geld, and have a wonderful day.